Okay, last week's Sedra, we said, is the foundation of how a Jew has to deal with Golus. This week's Sedra is the foundation of how a Jew has to interact with the Goyim in Golus, or with the secular authorities or secular influences. Okay, and therefore we find that whenever they would go to deal with the Romans, to intercede for various decrees or whatever else they needed, they would first review Parshas Vayishlach. And there was a minig to read Parshas Vayishlach Motzei Shabbos every week as a preparation for the week of how to live in Golus. And the Rebbe from Afta says that Yaakov Avinu sent Malachim ahead of him, meaning that this interaction, this confrontation between Yaakov and Esav would involve these angels for all future times. That whenever we had to confront the nations of the world, the Goyim we lived under, or even the secular influences we'll see, these angels would be aroused and help to alleviate the problems. And in fact, when Yaakov Avinu told Esav, "In lovan garti vo'echar ad ata," and I've delayed till now. So they say there's a hint to all of the Golios, the major Golios that we were in the word ata. Ata is ayin, is the 70 years in Bavel. Tough was the 400 years of Golus Mitzrayim. And Hay is the 5,000 years, that another 5,000 years of Golus Romi. And even in Golus Eretz Yisrael, right, Golus Yavan, Hanukkah is coming up, is called Golus Yavan. We had a Beis HaMikdash. We basically were in Eretz Yisrael. But Golus is not only a geographic status, it's also spiritual status. You can be in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash and be exiled far away from their core, from their spiritual essence. So even in that kind of Golus, right, it says that the Chashmonaim didn't learn from this Parsha, and they made a treaty with Rome, and because of that came the downfall of the Chashmonaim dynasty eventually. So we see that even the Golus in Eretz Yisrael, you can learn from this parsha. Even though it could be we're not even dealing with Goyim, we're dealing with Chiloni Jews, Jews that have thrown off the yoke of heaven. So it's important, therefore, to get the lessons from this parsha of how a Jew has to live amongst secular influences, amongst Goyim, and interact with them. And there are two dangers. The Beis HaLevi says, that's what Yaakov Avinu prayed, "Hatzileni no miyad ochi miyad Esav." Save me from my brother, from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. Sometimes the danger is that Esav tries to be our brother. And he tries to influence us. And he comes with friendliness, you know, be like me, assimilate, and everything will be fine. And sometimes the problem, he comes as Esav, right, to hurt and to destroy physically. So we need to be saved from both of those dangers, the physical dangers that the nations of the world present and the spiritual dangers that both the nations of the world present and even other secular influences. Rabbi Kiva Eger says a nice idea in the following Gemara, brings up the same idea. The Gemara says that if somebody is in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei, he should not interrupt his Shmoneh Esrei even if a king comes and bids him peace, and says hello, shouldn't stop and answer. And even if a snake is curling around your leg, you don't stop. He said, it means the following. There are two things that could stop a Jew from having that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One is the snake that can stop you physically, and the other is when the king comes and tries to be peaceful with you and tries to make you assimilate, and that can also stop your Shmoneh Esrei. So a person should not stop his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not because of the physical dangers nor of the spiritual dangers. And that's what it says. Yaakov sent these messengers. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim el Esav achiv arza seir sedei adam. To Esav, whether he's going to act like Esav, a stranger, and put him in physical danger, or achiv, or he's going to act like Esav, the brother, and put him in spiritual danger. And that's why it says arza seir sedei adam. Seir is Esav being the hairy person, and a seir, a goat, is a symbol of the Yetzer Hara. That's why we send the seir to the seir Lazazel, right? It's all the sins. Seir is a symbol of sin. So he sent an arza seir. It's also a symbol of sin because Esav was born hairy, mature. Esav's view of the world is, I want it now. Immediate gratification. This world, that's the ikar. So everything is already mature. It's not growing towards a goal. It's now, here and now. So that is the philosophy of Esav. That is very dangerous to Yaakov and to the Jewish people. And then there's Shdei Edom, right? Edom, the redness, represents bloodshed. So he was sending it to counteract the Esav of the Seir, the Yetzer Hara, the spiritual dangers, and also the Esav of Shdei Edom, the physical dangers of bloodshed. So we have to realize that we have to deal with both of those dangers, both the danger of physical damage from the nations around us and spiritual damage. And so what are the keys that we learn from Yaakov's behavior? First, that a Jew in Gaulis has to realize he's in Gaulis. And he has to act with subdued and humility, not to incite the Goyim, not to act with chutzpah too much, to respect the governments that he lives in, and obey the laws of the government. Dina de Malchus Adina. At the same time, okay, Yaakov Avinu is blamed for bowing down to Esav 7 times for too much hachnoa, being too subdued, right? Too not standing up to Esav enough, okay? Because what Yaakov should have done when he bowed was not bowing to Esav. You're bowing to the fact that God decided you should be in this situation. You're bowing to God's will. God said you have to be subservient, you have to be in Golus, you don't deserve to be in Eretz Yisrael at a Beis HaMikdash with your own Malchus, and therefore recognize that, and it should lead you to be subdued and humble you. But if being subdued and humbled to the nations of the world involves spiritual things, then you have to stand up straight, because that's not God's will. If you're bowing to God's will in physical things is one thing, but you're obviously not bowing to God's will if you're compromising on spiritual things. There you have to stand up and be strong and assertive. So you need the proper balance and gullus of when a Jew should be assertive and stand up for his spiritual rights and fight for them even, and when he has to be subdued and accept God's will in the physical things of the world. On the other hand, if the Jews are in physical danger, they have to stand up also for themselves. It's also not God's will that they should be harmed. And that's what Yaakov told Esav, Im lovan garti. And Rashi says, garti is the same numerical value as taryag. Im lovan garti, v'taryag mitzvah shamarti, why was he telling that to Esav? Should know I live by Lavan, right? And I kept all 613 mitzvahs and I didn't learn from his evil ways. He's telling Esav, if you're coming as my brother, but you want me to assimilate and you want to influence me, it won't work. I live with Lavan for 22 years and what's it called, I didn't learn from his evil ways. And I kept the Torah, I kept my perspective on the Torah, and so don't think that you're going to be able to make me assimilate. And the next pasuk is Vayihili Shor V'Chamor, and you should know that you're not going to be able to overcome me physically either, because I have a Shor. Shor means Yosef, who is the one who will overpower Esav in the end. Amalek will be given into the hands of the children of Yosef, and Chamor is Yisachar, who's the Amud HaTorah. So he's going to protect me spiritually, and Yosef's going to protect me physically. So whatever you're coming to do me harm, physically or spiritually, I'm protected. Or Shor v'Chamor, one refers to Shor as Yosef, Mashiach ben Yosef, and the Chamor is Ani Rochev al HaChamor, which is a description of the Mashiach. I have Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben Da, eventually I'm going to overpower you. Or I control, I'm not looking to control you. God gave me control in this world over the animals, right, over my servants. So I have control. You're not going to take it away from me. And I'm not looking to control you. I have things under my control that I'm responsible for. Or another thing it says, a shor gores, pushes things away. And a chamor bites. The difference, the idea being the following. If you're coming against me physically, I'll push you away physically. If you're trying to be too friendly, right, then I'm going to bite you away, right, and take something close and put it away. The Megicha keeps something far away from getting close. The Meshicha takes something close and pushes it farther away. So if you're coming against me, I'm going to push you away. If you're coming to get too close to me, I'm going to bite you away. So don't think that you can have an effect on me in either way. And that's what it says also. Vayira Yaakov ma'od vayetzer lo. Yaakov was afraid that his family would be killed. He would be killed. Vayetzer lo, and he was also concerned that he would kill others. So they asked, what's he concerned to kill others? Lamai said, who's going to kill? Esav, his 400 men? Right? That's a big deal to kill people like that. They're Rishoyim. But it says that gam onush letzadik lo tov. If a tzadik has to do something that's not necessarily the ideal way of doing it, it's also not good. Right? You can do things in a very nice, peaceful way. If they have to be done with bloodshed, that's not our way. But sometimes we're forced to do it. And therefore it says one of the problems with the Mitzrim was by your reyuos, so they made us bad. Right? They had influence over us. And they changed our character. They made us bad. Golda Meir, I usually don't quote, but she said she can forgive the Arabs for killing our children, but she can't forgive them for making us killers of other people. That's not necessary, but it's not. That's not the Jewish way. Right? We're not supposed to be people who blow shed blood. Sometimes you have to do it. Right? We feel bad about it. But in the end, if it's necessary, then it's ridding the world of evil. You can't have misplaced mercy, but you don't have to feel good about it. You can feel that the good could have come in a nicer way. Similar to what it says by Reb Meir in Bruria. Reb Meir had some thugs in his neighborhood, and he used to daven daily they should die. And his wife Bruria said, wouldn't it be better to daven they do tshuva? You get rid of the thugs the same way, but it'll be a nicer way. And Reb Meir accepted what she said, and he davened they should do tshuva, and they did tshuva. No more thugs, but you didn't get rid of them, you got rid of their sins. And even though it's a double standard, you know, the nations of the world do whatever they want, and they expect from us more, but they should expect from us more, because we're supposed to be a light for the nations of the world. It's hard to swallow, but that's the way it is. You know, they can kill each other in Syria, but if we, Chas v'Shalom, kill a citizen of in Gaza by accident or of a sudden, terrible thing. So part of it's anti-Semitism. But part of it is that they recognize that we're not the same animals that, you know, that are fighting in Syria. There's something special about the Jewish people, and they hold us to that standard. That's what Shimon and Levi didn't have that balance. You have to have the balance to be able to stand up, right, to the nations of the world at the same time, not to stand up overly. So Shimon and Levi, they took Dina, they violated her, they were holding her captive. So what should they do? Just let's go be very meek modest and humble, and no, you have to stand up, go get your sister back, and see to it that the people who did it were punished. No problem. But they killed the whole city. Right? That's a little bit too much. Why are you inciting? And Yaakov said, "Achartim also, you made me look bad in the eyes of the nations around. You gave them an excuse. And now, if we can kill innocent people, why shouldn't they?" So you have to have a balance. Where to stand up to the Goyim, and where to be more subdued and more, let's call it, meek and humbled by them. I'll tell you a story. When I was a rabbi in Miami, so I once had to go for a dinner or something to New York. So I landed in LaGuardia. I think there was Idlewild at the time, airport. And in those days, people didn't pick me up from the airport, so I took a bus to Borough Park. I got off the bus in the ends of Borough Park, and I see hundreds of people, at least 200-300 people, gathered in front of a public school with some kind of protest going on. And so I asked somebody, "What's going on over here?" It wasn't in the Jewish part yet of the Borough Park. They said that two Jews from a certain organization, I won't mention the name, but one of these, protecting organizations in a neighborhood, beat up some Puerto Ricans because the Puerto Ricans were firebombing shuls in the area, and they wanted to make a statement that you can't get away with this. But they didn't get the people who were firebombing. They just arbitrarily walked into the Puerto Rican neighborhood, picked somebody, and beat them up.
Well, that's
right. So they were protesting this, and the media were there, whatever. Okay, I kept walking, and next thing I see, there are four Puerto Ricans with iron poles surrounding me. Like, I said, maybe this is an escort they sent to bring me into New York. But it didn't look like that. So they said to me, "Your friends beat up our friends." I said, "I don't have any friends here. I come from Miami, and I don't know anybody here. I have no idea what you're talking about." They said, "Well, you're not going to get back to Miami." So I realized this is serious. So I started to say Tehillim under my breath, but to keep them busy, I started talking to them. I said, "Well, could you tell me what exactly happened? Why did these people beat up other people? What did they do? Did they do anything?" And they started telling me the whole story or whatever. We're walking along, and finally we come to a place where I could turn. And I said to them, I said, "It's been very nice talking to you, but I really have to go now, so have a good day." And I turned the corner, and miracle, they just kept walking straight. And as soon as I was out of their vision, I ran as fast as I could ever run in my life. I could have made a Guinness World Record for the 100-yard dash. In any case, what do you see? Here are people who wanted to stand up for Jews. You know, you're not going to do this to Jews. But there wasn't a balance of who to do it and how to do it. So instead of making a point, they endangered me. So how can you take into your hands that kind of responsibility? So a Jew has to know the balance of when to stand up for your rights and when to stand up and even fight, and when you're endangering and inciting things that endanger other Jews, endanger Jews in general. Okay. And Yaakov Avinu knew that in Galus, the Jewish people will never be destroyed. God has a promise, Lo Yitosh Hashem Amo. That's why by Purim, Mordechai told Esther, if you don't go to the king now, right, then Revach Vahatzola Yamud La Yehudim Mimakom Acher. I'm sure that God is going to save us. Second. Because Haman wants to destroy everybody, and that can't be. So it's your opportunity to have a hand in this. If you don't want to, somebody else will save them. But Yaakov knew that even so, right, he has to still have the struggle, because part of the nation could be destroyed. And that's why he split them into two groups, and he said if Esav gets one, the other one will automatically survive, because everybody can't be destroyed. But that doesn't mean that we're safe and nothing can happen to us, because short of destroying us completely and annihilating us, obviously the Goyim can wreak tremendous damage and harm to us. And therefore, the way to function is what Yaakov did, a three-prong attack. He sent a present, right? He tried to bribe Esav and appease him. That's the first thing we said. Appeasement. Be humbled. Subdued. What's it called? Don't incite them. Second thing is daven, right? And daven in the schus of Avram, with chesed. Jews should do chesed one with each other in galus. And avoda, tefillah, mitzvahs. And Yaakov Torah, those are the, and daven with all of that, with the schus of the Torah and the chesed and the avoda, and then be ready to fight when it's necessary. If it's necessary, you've tried everything else, right, then there's the balance of sometimes you have to stand up and fight too. And we should realize that in Galus, the Jewish people were compared to three things: the stars, the dust, and the sand at the sea, and the sand at the seaside, right? The beachhead. In Galus, we're not going to be like Kochavim. We're not going to be up there like the stars. We don't have to be like the offer, tread underfoot. We can stand up that they don't step on us. At the same time, but we're probably going to be is somewhere in the middle. We're going to be like the sand at the beach. That doesn't let itself be destroyed by the waves. The waves, the sea is representative of the evil in the world. How do they do that? So it's a beautiful medrash. The medrash says that when the first waves hit the shore, right before they were coming, the sea, the new created seashore, the Malach who represents them, right, came to God and said, "You're going to destroy the whole shore over here. This wave is going to wash them away." So God said to them, "Don't worry. They'll know what to do. It'll be okay." They didn't know, and they saw the wave coming, and they all huddled together. And then the wave broke and couldn't wash away the sand because it was cohesive together and formed the cohesive beachhead. So when Jews know in Galus that they have to be united, then they can overcome the waves of evil. Okay? That's one thing. And they also, it says in the parasha, that Yaakov Avinu was very careful not to lose his money and to preserve it. In Galus also, be very careful that we guard our material possessions, because poverty leads to stealing. And stealing leads to Chilul Hashem and leads to Goyim, what's it called, really getting on our case. Okay, and that's why it says that Yaakov then fought with the angel, fought with Esav. Okay, and fighting, he didn't fight him like prize fighting. He fought him with wrestling. Wrestling is where you hug, and you also push away and knock the other guy down. So it represented these two kind of things, three things. It represented the fact that we're going to have to struggle with the nations of the world in a physical way and knock them down or keep them out of the way so they don't knock us down. Secondly, sometimes they're going to try to hug us to death by assimilation. And sometimes Yaakov Avinu in the end wanted to keep this struggle going on, because sometimes if you're in Galus already, you have to embrace the Goyim for the good things that they have. A Jew has to be, it's like it says, Vayivoser Yaakov Levado, Yaakov remained alone. That hints to the fact that we're an Am Levado Yishko, we're a nation that dwells apart. We cannot assimilate with the nations of the world. We can't get too close to them. On the other hand, Levado does not mean isolated, because we're supposed to influence the world. So we have to be insulated from the world, but not isolated. And therefore, sometimes that wrestling, that connection to the nations of the world is good. You have to do business with them. You have to, what's it called, benefit from the services, the governments that they produce, in good governments, right? In America, for instance, what's it called, you can benefit from the freedoms they give you. And you can benefit also from some things. The Goyim produce technology. They produce advances in science and medicine or whatever. You can take advantage of them. There are benefits. Right? There's even things that you can benefit from Goyish literature or whatever. That Kabbalah Sva'emes Mimishamra says, take the truth from whoever says it. So there definitely are positive things that we can embrace from the Goyim. So the wrestling is embracing, hugging that you want to get the person away, right, where he's putting you in a hold, and knock him down. So all that is included in the struggle. In fact, it says that, Shmuel Malka was the king of Persia. So he once chided Shmuel. And he said to Shmuel, you know, your Mashiach has taken a long time to come. He said, probably because he has a slow donkey. He said, if I would give him one of my fast white horses from my corral, he'd probably come faster. He was like, you know, mocking him. So Shmuel said, you probably could give me a nice white horse and Mashiach would come faster, but he wouldn't have the beautiful colors of Mashiach's donkey. So I saw somebody explains it the following way. Every galus that we're in has a different color. We gain something from it. The Michta Meliol says that the hashpa, the influence to Jews in galus, does not come directly from God, but through the angels of the country that we're in. So therefore, the Avodas Hashem, the way we serve God in those countries, is colored by the character of the country. In Germany, they were very, you know, their Avodas Hashem was very on time and precision or whatever. In Russia, it was very emotional. He says, the Michta Meliol, that's why Hasidus was very successful in Russia. More emotional approach. In Lithuania, it was more of an analytical, intellectual approach. That's why that was the approach of Yiddishkeit. And it's not necessarily negative. Those are the beautiful colors that had we been in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash, we could have gotten all of that directly from Hashem. But now we needed to get it from all over the world and bring it back with the beautiful colors of Mashiach's donkey, the things that we benefited from the Goyim. So there are benefits too, right? So that's why it says that the person or the Malach that Yaakov was fighting with changed appearance. He sometimes appeared like a Goy or a robber. That represented the physical and material dangers that Jews are in Galus, where they have to stand up for their rights and sometimes fight for their life. At some other times during the night, he appeared like a Talmud Chacham. So some say that means that when the Goyim come and, you know, want to be smart and try to outsmart us to assimilate. But I think it means something else. There's a mitzvah to cleave to Talmid HaChamim. Sometimes Goyim do things good, right, that we can benefit from. Whether it's in science, technology, right, whatever it may be. And those cases, you can embrace the Talmud Chacham, who's coming to fight you. It's a struggle, but there's an inyan to embrace. Sometimes you're embracing, sometimes you're wrestling. So that's why when the morning came, Yaakov Avinu didn't want to stop the struggle, because there are benefits to it, right? There's benefits in standing up and fighting when it's necessary. There's benefits for resisting to be assimilated, and there are also positive benefits of embracing certain things that we get in Galus, that the Goyim also produce positive things also, right? So that is the parsha. Right, if we learn how to deal in Galus, again, even in the Galus and Eretz Yisrael, where we have to deal with the secular forces that also come to try to make us assimilate or to harm us or to do things against the frum core over here in many, many different ways, right? Either to monetarily hurt us or to physically hurt us or to make us try to assimilate into their way of life. If we learn the lesson well, right, then we'll be able to leave the Galus, come back to Eretz Yisrael with a Jewish malchus under the Melech HaMashiach ben Heirav Yomein.